Nemoto presents classical music giants. Richard Wagner, the music dramatist. Narrated with Microsoft Azure using the Christopher voice. Running time, approximately 9 minutes. The lights dim, the audience stirs, and from the orchestra pit rises a sound that feels less like music and more like the birth of a new world. Brass glows like molten metal, strings shimmer with tension, and an endless current of melody pulls listeners into a dream. The curtain lifts to reveal gods, heroes, and betrayals on a scale no stage has attempted before. This is Richard Wagner's theater, where music and myth merge into overwhelming experience. To some he is a genius, to others a danger, but to all he is unavoidable. Wagner sought not entertainment but transformation, and in doing so he altered music forever. Richard Wagner was born in Leipzig in 1813, in the shadow of the Napoleonic Wars. His father, a police clerk, died when Richard was only a few months old, and his mother remarried an actor and playwright. The theater became part of Wagner's earliest memories: costumes, rehearsals, the smell of grease paint. As a child, he devoured literature, especially German mythology and Shakespeare. Music came later. Unlike Mozart or Mendelssohn, Wagner was not a child prodigy. He began lessons in his teens, composing clumsy works, but his ambition was already immense. He declared that he wanted to write dramas where music would serve poetry, where the stage would become myth. His education was patchy, but his will was fierce. He studied scores of Beethoven and Weber, absorbing orchestral color. In Leipzig and later in Dresden, he held posts as a conductor, gaining practical experience. His early operas, Die Feen, das Liebesverbot, were imitative, reflecting Weber's romantic style and Italian influences. But with Rienzi, 1842, a grand opera about a Roman tribune, Wagner had his first major success. It was spectacular, long, filled with mass scenes. Audiences in Dresden loved it. Yet Wagner himself soon grew dissatisfied. He longed for something deeper, more Germanic, more rooted in myth than history. That longing led to The Flying Dutchman, 1843, a work that revealed Wagner's true voice. The story of a cursed sailor doomed to wander the seas until redeemed by faithful love resonated with Wagner's obsession with fate and salvation. The music surged with storms, the orchestra painted waves and winds, the leitmotif, the recurring musical idea associated with character or theme, appeared as a tool of drama. With Tannhauser, 1845, and Lohengrin, 1850, Wagner deepened this vision: stories of knights, redemption, and the struggle between sacred and profane love. The famous bridal chorus from Lohengrin, "Here comes the bride," ironically became a wedding staple worldwide, divorced from the opera's darker tale. Wagner was not only a composer but a political radical. Living in Dresden, he sympathized with revolutionary movements calling for German unity and democratic reform. In 1849, he took part in the Dresden Uprising. When the revolt failed, he fled, a wanted man, exiled for over a decade. These years were bitter: poverty, constant flight, dependence on friends. He lived in Switzerland, in Zurich, supported at times by admirers. Yet exile also gave him time to think, to write, to dream. He poured out essays that laid out his theories of art. In The Artwork of the Future, he argued for a synthesis of music, poetry, dance, and stagecraft, what he called Gesamtkunstwerk, the total work of art. He rejected opera as entertainment and sought drama as ritual, music as myth. It was during exile that he conceived his vastest project, Der Ring der Nibelungen, a cycle of four operas drawn from Germanic legend. Beginning with Das Rheingold, continuing with Die Walküre, Siegfried, and culminating in Götterdämmerung, The Ring would depict a universe of gods, heroes, dwarves, giants, and betrayal, an allegory of power, greed, and downfall. Wagner worked on it for decades, writing librettos first, then slowly composing. The Ring would consume his life, an artistic Everest few could imagine climbing. Wagner's exile was also marked by personal turmoil. He lived extravagantly even when penniless, pursued affairs, borrowed relentlessly. He was arrogant, convinced of his genius, often insufferable to friends. Yet people helped him. Liszt, for one, who conducted Lohengrin in his absence and later became family when Wagner married Liszt's daughter Cosima. Cosima, 24 years younger, was first married to conductor Hans von Bülow, but she and Wagner began an affair. In 1870, she became his second wife, fiercely loyal, managing his household and later his legacy. Wagner returned to Germany in the 1860s, thanks to the patronage of King Ludwig II of Bavaria, a young monarch obsessed with his music. Ludwig paid Wagner's debts, built him houses, and financed productions. With Ludwig's support, Wagner completed Tristan und Isolde, 1865, one of his most radical works. Its opening chord, the Tristan chord, shocked audiences with unresolved tension, chromaticism stretching harmony toward the future. The opera itself is a meditation on love and death, desire that can only be fulfilled in annihilation. It mesmerized some, bewildered others. But it pointed music toward modernism, influencing composers from Mahler to Schoenberg. Then came Die Meistersinger von Nürnberg, 1868, Wagner's only mature comedy, yet still grand and serious. Set in historical Nuremberg, it celebrates German art and tradition, portraying guilds of Meistersingers. It is both affectionate and nationalistic, with Hans Sachs as a wise cobbler poet embodying tradition and renewal. Critics later debated its politics, but musically it is rich, human, filled with choruses and lyricism. All of Wagner's ambitions, however, focused on the ring. He realized that ordinary theaters could not do justice to its scope. He envisioned a festival theater designed for his works alone. In Bayreuth, a small town in Bavaria, he built it, the Festspielhaus, with covered orchestra pit, darkened auditorium, acoustics designed for immersion. In 1876, after years of fundraising and toil, the complete ring was performed over 4 days. Attended by Europe's elite, the event was both triumph and ordeal. Some found it exhausting, others exalted. But Wagner had achieved the impossible, a theater for myth, a drama beyond opera. His final work, Parsifal, 1882, was described as a Bühnenweihespiel, a stage consecration festival play. It tells of the pure fool who redeems the Grail Knights. Mystical, solemn, filled with long meditations, Parsifal was controversial, some seeing it as transcendent, others as reactionary. Wagner himself oversaw its premiere at Bayreuth, insisting it never be performed elsewhere. Wagner died in 1883 in Venice, Cosima at his side. His death was news across Europe. Thousands came to Bayreuth to pay respects. Cosima devoted the rest of her life to preserving his legacy, running the Bayreuth Festival, turning it into a shrine for Wagnerians. But Wagner's legacy is double-edged. His music revolutionized harmony, orchestration, drama. Without him, Mahler, Strauss, Debussy, even film music would be unimaginable. His leitmotifs anticipate cinema's use of recurring themes. His scale redefined ambition. Yet his writings, especially his virulent anti-Semitism, are repellent, casting a shadow. In the 20th century, the Nazis embraced Wagner, particularly Hitler, who idolized him. Though Wagner had died long before, his ideas were twisted into ideology. This association taints his name, creating debates that continue. Can one love the art while condemning the artist? Still, his works endure. The Tristan chord remains a turning point in Western music, the ring a monument to myth and music, Parsifal a meditation that divides but captivates. To hear Wagner is to enter a world where time stretches, where desire burns, where sound engulfs. His art is overwhelming, total. What makes Wagner a giant is not only his innovations but his audacity. He dared to dream art as religion, theater as temple. He bent orchestras, singers, kings, and nations to his vision. He embodied romanticism's extremes, genius and arrogance, beauty and danger, transcendence and prejudice. He leaves us uneasy but also awed. He is the architect of myth, the composer who remade the landscape of sound and story.